Hello and welcome to a special new Goldsmith Odyssey sub-series called Soundtrack Spotlight. I'm Yavar Marathi, and I'm joined today by Douglas Fake and Roger Feigelson of Entrada Records to talk about their imminent premiere release of Jerry Goldsmith's score to the 1973 Italian mafia film, The Dawn is Dead. Welcome, guys.
Hey,
there you are.
Now, at some point in the future, I would love for each of you to join me for the longer Odyssey interviews series, where you can talk more broadly about your relationship with Jerry and his music over the years, and of course the many albums of his that you've both worked on at Entrada. But for this new, shorter series, I actually want to thank the both of you because you kind of inspired me in a way to start it, to, you know, focus on new soundtrack album releases because of all those neat mini podcasts you guys were recording together not too long ago, whenever you would have a new album coming out. I think the first was about Downhill Racer by Kenyon Hopkins in August of last year, and maybe the most recent was Mike Moran's Time Bandits this past February.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then the pandemic hit and we got swamped and distracted and so many other priorities. And
did we do one on Ozana's Raid?
Don't believe
No, I don't remember. I would have loved to hear that.
Must have been at the time we stopped. Probably a time issue.
Well, we can even go back and talk about Ozana's Raid if you want to. There's no reason to... No, Doug, that was a score you're very passionate about. And
yeah, especially Jerry Goldsmith's unreleased score to it.
What? Oh, boy. That would be great. Well, there are still some Jerry Goldsmith unreleased Western scores to be dug out if they're somewhere in the vault.
Here's trivia for you. Which score relates Frank Duvall and Jerry Goldsmith?
Oh. I was going to say Hawk. Wait, no.
Aha. Fun to put you on the spot.
Yeah. No.
Sorry, I'm not in a mental space for it right now. Tell me, what
I'm
is
not
it?
I'm sure I know the answer.
Example of one of those ones where, well, it's one of my favorite scores because it's a military picture. That's a clue. And it's also, he came in late in the production. He was not the intended composer. Jerry Goldsmith wasn't. Twilight's Last Gleaming.
Oh, right. I do remember reading about that.
Yeah. He got pretty sick at some point. Jerry.
So had he started working on one or no?
We never really found out. I used to try by asking Jerry. Jerry mentioned the gestation was, he was asked to go to Munich. That's where they were shooting the picture because they could build missile silos over there in Munich. So that's where they shot it. It's a German company financed the film. So he went to Germany. That's where he recorded it too. So he just mentioned he had to rush through that whole process and really didn't have any working knowledge anyway of, you know, Duvall's score. He didn't say anything about whether he heard it.
I don't think he usually would listen to the previously written score if there was the opportunity to. If he could help it, right? He wanted to do his own thing.
Exactly. But, I mean, maybe even a curiosity level or maybe something, you know, temp track. I don't think Duvall's score was rejected for any reason. I don't think it would have been.
Health.
I think for health reasons, he just said, I'm just not going to be able to get it done, which I think was probably a big disappointment for Aldrich.
Yeah, I imagine so. So let's jump right into talking about The Dawn is Dead. You'd think that a post-Godfather film starring Anthony Quinn as an Italian mafia boss might be more remembered today, but I think it's fair to say this is one of the more obscure theatrical features in Jerry's filmography. And so I wanted to ask you both what your relationship is to the film and the score and kind of what led you to pursuing it for release.
I would think it's kind of obvious. And he did have a conversation with Jerry about it a long time ago. You know when Godfather came out?
72, right?
Uh-huh. Do you know when Godfather 2 came out?
74. This is between them.
Yeah, right in the middle. Yeah, and those two movies overshadowed virtually anything going on in that particular line of pictures, which was, Jerry even mentioned, it's very unfortunate to be the first major studio film out of the gate to be a Godfather film after the success of Godfather, which nobody questions.
And had it been planned before The Godfather came out, or was it kind of spurred by the popularity of that?
I'll be honest. I don't know if it was spurred by the popularity or if it already been in the works. I really don't. I mean, I've always thought of it as a fairly high quality picture. Mm-hmm. I just know a big problem was Paramount went into production with Godfather 2 early in that period, you know, in 73. And I think all discussions were pretty much about Godfather swept the major Oscars. Godfather 2 was reportedly going to be an even bigger picture. And here's this.
So they had the pressure to get this out in advance so that it wasn't competing with the sequel, I imagine.
I would guess. Yeah.
But what about the score? Did Jerry speak to you about working on it and what his thoughts were about it?
Yeah, there was one thing that we did talk about. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure if it made into Jeff's notes. I'll have to go back and I'll read them again when the album is in stock, I guess, tomorrow. But that's, we did talk about one thing, and that was that I asked if there was a character in the score. It was that electronic sound. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know more about that because it wasn't an array of keyboards. It's just mm-hmm. one single sound, and it doesn't change pitch or something. He said he was always proud of the idea that he had. That was a device because the architecture of the score is that there's not really action cues, but there mm-hmm. is a lot of bursts of action.
Yeah, that are within larger cues.
Everything has a suspense that builds up to it. So he had that little nick sound. And that was sort of carry all the strings and stuff, sort of. That was to tip you off that whatever you're seeing 3 or 4 minutes there is going to erupt in some kind of sudden violence. It's something that I think Martin Scorsese does in his movies, but it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It kind of puts you on edge a little bit.
It does, but it's the violence is not protracted. There's just sudden bursts of it. And Jerry said that he was always proud of the idea that he would build up the tension and then all of a sudden erupt with, you know, really, really aggressive, you know, bars, but they were not action cues per se.
What's the story behind the production of this album? Can you go kind of, you know, behind the scenes a little bit in how this is finally coming about?
You know, it's funny. There's so many Goldsmith scores. And as a Goldsmith fan and a label, of course, we're aware of everything he's done. But it seems like this score is the one that collectors always leave to last. They always forget about. It's like the last score they're going to mm-hmm. think of for Goldsmith. For some reason, it's obscure. It's not like a TV movie or anything. It's still theatrical.
Yeah, but it's almost as obscure for people as a TV movie might be.
Yeah, and when you think of all the Goldsmith scores that haven't been released, most of them is because of element issues, missing damage, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And when we did Take Her, She's Mine, I thought, you know, I was thinking about unreleased stuff, and of course, most of them have element issues. And I thought, well, Don is dead. No one's ever, we've even forgotten to ask about that one. This is okay. What we do. So I said, why not ask? And sure enough, the elements were there, great condition. And then Doug can talk about obviously putting the thing together, but it was hassle-free in terms of the assets that were available.
So there were no rumors of lost tapes or anything like there have been with other films of the era?
No, it was just unknown.
Roger, he's underselling his part of it. I think one of the reasons we've gotten so far over these years is Roger has a great style, if you will. The art of negotiations or whatever. Roger seems to have a manner that works real well.
I was kind of struck while listening to the album, just what a disparate bunch of elements make up this score. It's kind of a work of extreme variety and contrast. It's got lovely orchestral thematic writing, and that goes to, frankly, some pretty experimental synthesizer stuff that's kind of unique to this score. It's got a really unique sound to it. And I would confess that for many years, the latter kind of outweighed the former in my own mental picture of the score. I wonder if I'm kind of alone in thinking of it as sort of that unreleased crime score with all the synth noises. But I think a lot of people are going to be surprised after hearing the elements you got sound so good that not only do the lyrical themes in the score stand out to me more, but even the most synth-heavy cues are so much more interesting now that I can hear them well. There's a lot more going on in them.
See, I don't think of it as a synth-heavy score. I think of it as having, it's a full orchestral score. minor tubas, Dasami tubas, but other than that, it's full symphony. And it just has a synth as one keyboard sound, but it's so prominent because it's used as a character. I think that was part of what Jerry said. It's a voice in the film. Like they're moving around in the garages and things of those kind of scenes. There's a lot of moving around in garages and warehouses. And Jerry said, that's actually a character. So I never think of it now as a synthesizer score. I mean, it's like, that's a character like Anthony Quinn and Frederick Forrest, and they're characters. I listen to the orchestra, and if you listen to most of the cues, it's an orchestral score, with the exception of the main title. The main title, because it's so transparent.
And of course, the main title is the impression so many people have of most scores. So it kind of leads with that sound, even though it's not really the dominant. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's throughout the majority of the score, but I think a lot of people think of it in their minds as a dominant identity of it when it's just one element.
You played the album that Roger sent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know the main title?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, see, I've had conversations with people on the main title where they say there's no orchestra, they hear strings. I'll mention at various intervals, Jerry writes that figure for the brass. You know, you hear the trombones coming and stuff.
They right, go, right.
Anything like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's percussion. You can hear diggity-diggity-go, boom, boom, and stuff. And Don is dead. And they say, oh, yeah, and your piano and stuff. What I kind of picked out was the synths are doing sort of a longer line theme, but really low so that it's hard to notice it. In poor sound quality, it just kind of comes across as like a texture, like a weird burbling down there. But in the album master, I heard you actually can pick out that there are notes and it's going on a journey. And it's those last four notes of it, ba-dum-bum-bum, like you said, which are often on their own because Jerry would frequently have a shorter fragment of a theme stand in as representative throughout the score because it's more malleable. It's quicker to use just four notes than a longer idea. So he kind of presents a longer idea subtly, but then, like you said, it's those four notes that are dominant throughout the rest of the score, I think, that kind of weave throughout it. Well, and they're also, they're orchestral. They're not electronic. But it's just interesting that I've talked to people who say, there's no brass anywhere. I go, are you talking about just the main title? Because those are trombones.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember that. And I say, are you talking about no brass in the score? And then they'll say, yeah, I don't remember any brass anywhere. I'll say, huh. Are you serious? when Anthony Quinn has his heart attack. I mean, that's like right out of Planet of the Apes.
I think their ears are going to be opened by this new album. I think it's going to really make a difference, and people are going to really, you know, have a new experience of this score.
Yeah, I think so. A close friend of mine, Roger Spread, has already mentioned when he listened to it, one of his first thoughts was, wow, that's right out of Illustrated Man. There's a couple of cues where you're thinking of the final, you know, when Robert Drevis is, you know, smashing in his face. You know, I don't know how much you want to know about that movie, but the cue that you're hearing when all spit and everything is coming out of Robert Drevis's face, my friend Fred goes, wow, that's right out of Illustrated Man, Doug. And I'm going, yeah, and it's part of the Dawn is Dead that nobody ever, like, you could tell them, oh, yeah, there's a little bit of action that sounds like Planet of the Apes. And they just go, I don't remember that.
My Goldsmith Odyssey co-host was hearing little bits of the Satan Bug showing up in this score. And Jeff Bond was telling me he heard connections to Contract on Cherry Street, which is one of my favorite Goldsmith scores. So it's definitely a Goldsmith score of the era, of the early 70s. It is through and through charged with his sound. Doug, maybe you'd like to talk a little bit more about the orchestral makeup of this score and offer a bit of insight as to what Jerry's doing. The synthesizer element seems to be tied specifically to the mafia-related work in the movie. But whenever there's anything not directly tied to crime happening or whatever, there are a lot of other kind of flavors in the score.
That one synth sound is associated with the sort of mechanisms in motion, crime families and how they're working. But because it starts with peace negotiations, there's supposed to be these crime families now that the previous Don is dead, and they're talking about how they can make alliances so they don't kill each other off. So that little mechanism is supposed to be the wheelings and dealings and things like that. That's my understanding. It's not an orchestral color to add to the action, so to speak. It's part of the character. Then Anthony Quinn's story, which in my opinion, that's the heart of the picture, you know, actually, because he enters into a romance with the singer and he cares about her, you know, and that's where the love theme comes. And you could tell Jerry was very interested in that part of the story. So there isn't any synth. It's all strings, and you know, it's a very pretty theme. And of course, then there's the song that uses
and that's,
the theme.
Yeah, that's really important because this was the first time that his wife, Carol, collaborated with him on a song, but in advance of The Omen and The Piper Dreams, but she wrote the lyrics to his melody, and it turned into sort of a pop ballad as diegetic music within the picture. I guess it's supposed to be the character of the singer performing it herself, right? She's getting involved with the Don because she thinks it'll further her career, her singing career.
Yeah, it's a little bit, hate to pick on it because, you know, it's just one of those little technicalities, but she gives him the audition tape. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly legitimate. She's legitimate. She's not involved with mafia or anything. She just, through connections, she gives the tape to him because he's connected to a record label. And she just wants to get discovered. He's playing that tape, if you recall, in the scene, only for a few seconds, just before she arrives.
Last night, you cast a spell with your gentle touch. I surrendered to love so willingly.
He turns off the tape recorder. Okay, that's a recording unto itself, a whole version of the theme. Yeah.
Right, right.
And then, but they only play a few seconds. Then she comes in the door, they talk for a second, and she says, did you have a chance to hear the tape? And he goes, I was just listening to that now. I really liked that last one. And he pushes the play button. And now it's a whole different arrangement of that. There's a little bit of a, well, okay, now that it needs to be a little more prominent, you're drawing attention to it. Jerry's now added more to it. But I was thinking on a technical level, can he have rewinded or fast forward? I like this particular version of it, but he didn't.
Yeah.
But what's neat is Jerry does, you know, he develops that into a really beautiful theme.
Last night, you cast a spell with your gentle touch. I surrendered to love so willingly. For when you held me, each moment somehow seemed magical. Yet I knew this was not a fantasy, because you wanted me, and I wanted you. As we lie here quietly watching the dawn appear, I am filled with the wonder and delight of our last night.
And even in that scene, he kind of transitions between diegetic and non-diegetic music. He kind of, it turns into a bit of a score cue.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
And then it stays a score cue. Very skillfully, instruments drop out, and then you hear guitar comes back in, and now her singing continues.
Yeah, and then it's back to the record. And
however, now it's a totally, all a different key, with different instrumentation. It's now clear that Jerry really worked quite a bit on how to write a song with his wife that they're going to use in the audition. And they obviously did two or three versions because the masters had those. And then he had to write this entire orchestral interlude, and then still have that rejoin the picture as, you know, they're doing the audition again. So it's really a whole piece that really travels a lot. And yet it's really in the film kind of used just as her audition tape leads to a love scene.
But it's great to have both versions in full on the album, thanks to you, and also all of Jerry's score cues that develop it as well.
Listen to the beginning. When you get to the scene where the beating in the bedroom, that's a very dramatic scene. You listen to the motif that kicks that cue off. If you watch the film, that's the sequence that starts the war, technically. The rest of the entire film is a war. But that particular scene is the sort of beginning of things are going wrong. Well, Jerry writes a motif, and then that stays away all the way till they get to the warehouse scene when they get their revenge, and Jerry brings that in. And I always thought it was a really cool way. Jerry's using that motif as an example of the war that's not yet started till the beating. He introduces a new idea, and then that becomes, no matter where the movie's headed, Jerry keeps letting you know it's headed to a war. They're all going to end up at each other's throats now, which is what they do.
And he kind of ties the love theme subtly in with that, in that cue, the beating as well, doesn't he? You know, it's kind of a disintegrated, dark, hard to recognize version of it. But he's showing how the love element of the movie, the relationship, is so intertwined in the kind of back and forth.
I don't know exactly how you pronounce the actor's name. Charles Chiaffi. The one where the one real action cue is at the end when he's trying to run and get away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jerry goes into one of his propulsive action cues for a little bit. There's also a motif for that character, because it's that character and his wife that are doing all the things to try and, they're the ones that sabotage things.
Right. It's kind of a Macbeth sort of inspired situation, I think.
Yeah. And so just to wrap it up, in Jerry's case, it's an example where just watching the movie, you may think the score, well, I hear the electronics, which, like I said, it's not really electronic score, but because that sounds prominent. Mm-hmm. Or they just sort of figure like the score didn't, there wasn't that much music. I didn't hear anything really, it's no big action cues or whatever. But when you dig into it, you start realizing there's a lot of his intricate architecture to music, mm-hmm. interconnects ideas and stuff. He has little things that he does that he's so skillful at bringing in at certain times and associating them with certain people and characters, just his gift.
So there's one other very prominent theme in this score we should touch on for people, because it is, I guess, what people would call the Italian theme. Anthony Quinn's character gets sort of an old world Italy theme. It doesn't sound like Nino Rota at all. It sounds purely like Jerry. It's a really striking part of this score as well. I think the last cue where it appears, Final Meeting, is one of my favorite moments in the whole score.
I guess Anthony Quinn, he does have kind of an old world theme. I don't know if I thought of it Nino Rota style.
No, it's not. That's what I'm saying. It's distinctly different from, considering Godfather came out so soon before this film. I just wanted to call it out because there is a little hint of Italy in the score, but not in a Nino Rota sort of way. It's very much a Jerry Goldsmith theme.
I got you. I agree. Roger agreed too.
Yeah. Roger, what's your favorite element of this score?
I'm going to give you a confession here. So I'm on the business end of this business, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like to see how the sausage is made. So Doug, you know, have at it, go with God, do your thing. I actually like to hear these albums when I crack open the shrink wrap, like everybody.
Okay. So you're facilitating them to happen, and then you listen to them for the first time, usually when they come out.
Because I'm a collector too, and that's the experience I like to have. So I haven't played it from end to end yet because I save that experience. So when I, like a collector, I'm opening it up, I'm looking at the packaging.
Oh, exciting.
For the first time.
The term he used, sausage is made, mm-hmm. that's a good one. I think about that now myself. He mentioned that on, I think it was one, either Stu Phillips or Arthur Rubinstein's. I don't remember which project. Either we're working on War Games or Battlestar Galactic or something. I just remember, I'm doing the Pro Tools part. I'm doing some surgery, joining some cues. We're working on stuff. We may even have been mixing things. And do you think the triangle is too prominent here and that kind of stuff? And Roger, I will always remember Roger sitting on the couch. You know, he's enjoying the music overall. But he goes, you know, this is like watching sausage being made. And I thought about that for a second. I realized what he's saying is, yeah, eating sausage is fun until you see how it's made. You know, and all of a sudden you never want to eat sausage again.
Reminds me of a comment Lucas Kendall made years ago when he was doing this. He said, I don't listen to my albums because, you know, it's like working in an ice cream factory. You don't go home and eat ice cream. So he worked on these albums. He's like, I'm done. I don't want to hear this stuff. It's like, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Sitting and watching, you know, that cue is so exciting. And then you watch it being assembled and you go, wow, they're sitting there trimming out mistakes and then adjoining it to bars here and moving things around. All of a sudden, you're kind of feeling, you know, it's like now every time I play that cue, I'm going to hear, yeah, they cut this and there was a mistake here. So they cut a bar there. It's going to be like, I never want to hear it again because it's all chopped up or something. It isn't like a piece of music anymore. It's just, you know, something glued, put together, like, you know, whatever.
And the repetition. It's like, oh, let's move that edit 0.5 of a second this way. Nah, that doesn't work. Move it back. Move it. And you're hearing the cue over and over and over again. It's like, well, I did like this cue for a while.
This score in particular is going to be fresh for so many people, I think, because it's been so overlooked, because, you know, in the film, it's maybe a little low in the mix and it's not a particularly well-remembered film. So I can't wait for people to hear it. Thanks both of you so much for joining me on this new series and discussing your brand new premiere album of Jerry's score for The Dawn Is Dead. It sounds amazing, and I can't wait to hear what other folks think of it.
Me too. Thanks again.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. Can't wait till the next one.